Another week, another low point for UNLV. I feel like I've said that before, but it's getting harder and harder to describe what is going on with this football program. San Jose State wins their first game of the year, beats the Rebels 50-37. I'm Case Kiefer on the Rebel Room, joined as always by UNLV expert, beat writer, Mike Grimala. Mike, you were there for this one. Another ugly performance.
Yeah, I mean, we talked last week, and I think we both agreed there was a chance that they would go in and lose this game. I just didn't expect it to be another 50-point performance where they, you know, like they did to with New Mexico or with Utah State. Because you just don't expect that from this San Jose State team. I thought there was a chance that if the UNLV played badly, they would lose. I didn't think they would get blown out like this. So that's hard to take. And that if you're a UNLV observer or a UNLV administrator, it's got to be hard to take. And like I said, it's a low point. This is now the low point of the season. Maybe of tone, like, you got to go back to how, like, now you're fighting with Howard for the low point of the Tony Sanchez's tenure here. So that's how bad it was. It's right up there. It's in the discussion with Howard now.
Right. Just strictly from a game standpoint before we get into everything else that I'm sure people want to hear about. It's kind of the talking point right now. But I didn't watch the game, had other stuff going on. But you look at it from purely a statistical standpoint, it seems like the game was pretty even other than three turnovers for UNLV. What was that really the difference?
I would say the deciding factor, you know, Max Gillum got picked off three times. That was those were big. One of them was a pick six that really broke the game open. But the biggest thing was San Jose State came into the game as kind of a pretty inept offense. You know, they're bottom of the country in offense, you know, less than 2 yards per carry offensively. Now sacks are factored into that. So it's, you know, for true rushing plays, it's a little higher, but still, I mean, they're high for rush. I mean, their average for rushing on the season is, you know, 50 yards a game, a team that can't run the ball at all. And then they came in and they against UNLV and they ran for, what was it, 157 yards. So UNLV is just getting pushed off the ball up front against San Jose State, a team that is among the worst in the country, maybe the very worst running team in the country. And that tells you where UNLV's defense is right now. If you can't stop San Jose State's running game, you can't defend anyone. Like there's really no other way to put it. They can't defend anything right now. They can't defend the pass. They gave up, you know, 349 yards passing to San Jose State. So 350 through the air, 150 through the ground. If you can't slow San Jose State down any more than that, then you have no chance of defending anyone.
Yeah, that was really eye-popping to me. San Jose State's quarterback, Josh Love, 25 for 36, 335 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. Never thought you'd see a stat line like that from San Jose State this year. As you've probably heard, Ray Brewer, not with us today, had prior engagements, but even he said, I've talked to him a little bit about the game. It's kind of hard to defend UNLV because if you've listened to the show, you know he'll be the biggest apologist. And, you know, his first instinct would be to say, well, this season got derailed because we didn't see Armani Rogers going down. But even he said, it's just so hard to defend with the way the defense is playing. And I think we were all wrong, especially me. I said there was no way the defense wouldn't be a little bit better this year with a new coordinator coming in. And it seemed like they bottomed out last year. But this is just so, I mean, they can't stop anyone.
How do we explain the first four games of the season where they were a legitimately good defense? I've brought up the stats before. Through the first four games, they had more sacks than they did all of last year. They were top 30 in the country in sack rate. They were top 35 in total sacks. They won two games pretty much based on their defense. They almost won at Arkansas State based on their defense. Special teams lost it for them, and the offense lost that game. I mean, the defense was legitimately good through four games. And then when they got into Mountain West play, I kind of figured they should be able to match up with these Mountain West teams, considering they look pretty good against USC, they look good against Arkansas State. It's like, oh, Mountain West, you know, they should be able to handle their business. Instead, they've completely fallen apart. Like if it had been this way from day one, and it was been all eight games, they've been getting torn apart like this on the defensive side, I could understand that a little bit more. But I can't sort of square the idea of the team we saw in the first four games and now the defense we've seen in the last four games. It just doesn't make sense. They can't make any plays. Tony Sanchez went into it after the game He went in it on a micro level and a macro level. The micro was, you know, teams just keep putting us in space and we can't defend those plays down the field with our secondary. And then macro, he said, you know, we just don't have athletes. We don't have enough fast, you know, athletes, guys with enough athleticism to play defense effectively. And he said, you know, recruiting, we're going to have to devote pretty much the entire recruiting class for 2019 to defense is basically what he said. So yeah, it's I don't know what happened, but the defense has not been what we expected. If anything, it's been worse. 50 points in three of the last four games, including San Jose State. You really can't explain that away.
Yeah, it's a good point because they did look better at the beginning of the year. One thing, I do not by any means think this makes up for all the differential, but I will say that the schedule, as it often does in college football, hasn't really turned out the way we thought. I think those first four games, you look back, a little bit not as challenging as we would have thought. I mean, USC's clearly in a down year. Arkansas State's not as good as we thought. UTEP is the worst team in the country. And last year, UTEP and San Jose State were kind of sparring for that title. I think San Jose State's a little bit better. Utah State, obviously, is probably the best team they've played so far. But still, not excusing it away, just maybe that's a little bit of the differential in defense. It was interesting to hear you say some of the things Tony Sanchez said after the game, because for the first loss in this current streak, I feel like it's not what Tony Sanchez said that is the talking point. You tracked down Desiree Reed Francois after the game in San Jose, and I feel like that's the talking point right now, what everyone is saying. In case you missed it, Reed Francois didn't exactly give a ringing endorsement to Tony Sanchez. She said, "It's a disappointing loss. We have four games left. We'll review everything top to bottom after those four games. Right now, my job is to support this football program, and that's what we're going to do. These young men deserve that."
It was, yeah, and obviously it was very, very solemn. Like, it was very, like, it was not, you know, a very pleasant atmosphere after the game outside the visitor's locker room when I pulled her aside to talk to her. But you read that quote, I mean, and you can, if you want to parse it, none of it is good for Tony Sanchez. We have four games left. We'll review everything top to bottom after those four games. And when you see that, it's the top that stands out, like from the top to the bottom, and Tony Sanchez is at the top. And then she says, "We'll do that after four games. Right now, my job is to support this football team," which implies that, you know, after the season, her job is going to be something to do something else, which implies that there's some sort of action that's got to be taken to clean things up on the football side. So yeah, I mean, none of it is good. I mean, she's not going to throw bouquets at him after a game like that. So you're not expecting super positive comments. But yeah, if you're going to read anything into what she said, it doesn't look good for Tony Sanchez.
Yeah, certainly, and I'm glad to see you break it down the same way. I didn't know if I was being overly reading into it too much or being overly negative. I know it's my role, and from running into people that listen to this over the years, you know, I'm supposed to be like the angry UNLV guy that's negative about everything on this podcast. But, you know, I will say, not really, and I will defend myself a little bit, that I never want to see someone lose their job. I'm not taking that, like, lightly. But it's just where we are right now, where we've talked about it. I thought Tony Sanchez was a good hire. I figured, why not? Like, let's try it. UNLV's tried everything else. It just certainly hasn't worked out. And I think we're at a point now where these questions have to be asked. And there's so much pessimism with the fan base. And I really do think a month and a half ago or whatever, there was some optimism. That's totally changed. And I just feel like if you bring Tony Sanchez back, you're going to be risking that and a lot of apathy on top of it. So it's a really tough situation.
Yeah, I think it's tough because when you're grading UNLV football coaches, you're not grading on like a normal curve. You're grading on like the UNLV curve. Like, if Tony Sanchez's tenure ended today, you know, and you put him, you know, historically with the rest of the coaches in the program history, he probably goes in the plus column. I mean, he didn't have a winning season, but he got you the practice facility, which is a huge development for, you know, for the university and for whoever the next guy is, if there is a next guy after the season. That's just a tremendous boon to the program. And although they didn't, you know, they took a big step back this season, I do feel like they have at least raised expectations to the point, which is something I've said previously. Like, there's at least some expectation for UNLV football now that they're going to be like a competitive team, five, six wins you can shoot for, which you couldn't say in the past in past years. It was always, you know, 2-3 wins. There's no hope. There's why even bother having a season? And Sanchez sort of raised those expectations a little bit. He got you the practice facility. I think he goes in the plus column as it is, based, you know, compared to the, you know, other coaches that UNLV has had in the history of the program. But yeah, I also agree with you. Like, it's this, they were, he was selling incremental improvement. You know, we're winning more games this season than we did last season, and they did that for 3 years. Very slow progress. And then to take a huge step back like this, there's a great chance that they lose out in that last 4 games of the season. Their schedule does not get easier. If you end the season on an 8-game losing streak and you're 2-10, I mean, Sanchez was 3-9 his first year, so that they'll be, this will be a worse season than, you know, his first year. So you've gone all the way backwards. You've gone beyond square one to now you're in the hole after 4 years. I mean, that's on the field, that's not what you want.
Yeah, certainly. And he's done some good things. There's no taking away, like you said, from the facility. And I really like some of the ways he incorporated Las Vegas more. Of something that, you know, being through the first couple coaching tenures I was here, I didn't understand why people didn't embrace that more. I think he set some templates that can work in the future. But maybe we're being a little premature. Still a third of the season left. UNLV will not be in a bowl game unless they can win out. And that seems, I'll just go ahead and say it, impossible. The worst thing for Tony Sanchez is that the schedule now is getting tougher. Fresno State and at San Diego State the next 2 weeks. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of talking like he's already gone, but what does he need to do to kind of change the narrative and give himself a chance to have another year?
Well, he can either win one of these next 2 games, which would be a major upset, and then that sort of gives you a feather in your cap and keeps you alive for another week in terms of, you know, bowl eligibility. If they beat San Diego State, or, you know, Fresno State
this week
is this coming up at home, and they beat Fresno State last year at Fresno State. So I mean, that's, Fresno's maybe a little bit better even than they were last year. But who knows? Like, that, those two teams have had some interesting results in recent years. So the first thing he can do to help himself, obviously, is to win that game, or at least be competitive and not, you know, the blowouts that we've seen the last three of the last 4 weeks. And then the other thing that he can do that is sort of on the horizon, it's not coming up soon, but last game of the season, you beat Reno. If you do that, that will get you a lot of goodwill. That's something they haven't done the last 2 years. He did it his first year, and that's something that sort of sparked the enthusiasm, like another wave of enthusiasm for him. The team wasn't great, but they beat Reno, and that was a big deal. If they can't, you know, that game's at home, maybe if you can pull that one out, salvage your season. I mean, it's going to be tough. You know, you can't, it's tough to put a bow. If they go into that game on a 7-game losing streak, you know, it's tough to, you know, put a bow on that by winning your final game. But, you know, Reno's pretty good this year, probably going to a bowl game. Maybe you can upset them in the final week and going to the off season with a little bit of positivity. And that'll make a lot of followers of the program happy. But, I mean, it's winning. It just comes down to winning. That's really all I can do at this point. Win another game, 2 games this year, and then just see if just get the ship pointed in the right direction again.
Yeah, that Reno game now, though, that looking much harder, too. I can hear Brewer groaning from here, but Reno upset San Diego State last week, 28-24. They also barely lost to Boise, I think, a couple weeks ago. There's really not an easy spot left on the schedule. You're going to be at Hawaii, I guess. But you brought up a good point. Some crazy things have happened, especially in that rivalry game and against Fresno State. There's just not a lot you could talk yourself into right now with how things are going to turn around. But I guess we'll just have to see.
And you've got Armani coming back for the final 2 games. Maybe if that was the problem all along, I mean, because the losing streak did start when he went out, you know, if you're going to argue that maybe, you know, the ball control, running game offense keeps your defense off the field, keeps them fresher, maybe he impacts the game that way. Maybe getting Armani back for the last couple of weeks makes you a better team and you have a better chance to win that Reno game or compete with Hawaii. That's something to look forward to. But yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a very tough final month of the season. Like, that, this is the hard part of their schedule. That's the crazy thing to think about. Like, they've had these struggles and now they're going into the hard part of the schedule.
Yeah, certainly. I do think that the other big talking point about the Tony Sanchez situation, and usually one that, usually makes me kind of roll my eyes, because I feel like if you're an athletic director, especially a new athletic director, it's on you to figure it out. But I did hear multiple people say when they were talking about getting a new coach, it's just UNLV's financial situation, of course, not the best. How will that be a factor in deciding what happens with Tony Sanchez at the end of this year?
It's got to be a huge factor, right? It's like, because UNLV is not a school that pays coaches, you know, top dollar. That's sort of, you know, Tony Sanchez is not making a king's ransom compared to other college football coaches. He did sign an extension just before Desiree Reed-Francois took over. So he's signed through the 2021 season. So he's got this season, then he's got three more after it. He's making $600,000 a year. So, I mean, if you've got to pay that or a portion of it for 3 years plus his staff, if they, you know, with whatever they've got left on their contracts, and then pay another coach on top of it, that's when you're paying multiple coaches at once and you're paying a staffs, you know, not to coach your team, that's when you need, like, your boosters and your donors and that whole college football old boys network to, like, rally around your program and say, hey, let's get you out of this hole and we're going to take care of things. I don't think UNLV really has that. So where's the money going to come from if you're going to hire another – you're going to hire a coach to replace Tony Sanchez for 3 years and you're going to pay two coaches, where is that money going to come from to hire someone good? Like, if you're just going to take another chance on an up and coming, you know, offensive assistant from a group of five school or someone that has never been a head coach before, like, how many experienced head coaches, college football head coaches, are going to take a UNLV job for $500,000 a year? The list is probably very short. So you're taking another chance on an unproven head coach. You got to pay him very little. It's you've got to thread the needle to really get a coach in here that has a chance to turn this around. So that's, you know, that's Desiree Reed-Francois' task.
Exactly. I think that's what I was getting at with my comments, is just if I feel like if you're Desiree Reed-Francois and you feel like you're done with the Tony Sanchez tenure, that it's not going to get you to where you want to be, I just think you have to kind of find a way to figure it out. I know it's not going to be easy like it would be at a major school, but I just feel like that's why you were brought in. So you got to figure it out one way or the other. I do think there's an element here at play that's often overlooked. I feel like UNLV's just had bad luck to be this bad for so long. I think coaching searches, there's been some research done on them. They're such, you know, you think you make a slam dunk hire and it turns out the wrong way and vice versa. I just feel like there's a big element of luck in getting the right guy in, and I feel like it's just gone against UNLV time and time again. That doesn't mean it's going to go right the next time, but I feel like this job's just kind of cursed in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, you've heard some, you know, talk about, you know, near misses and guys who are almost here and guys who got away, and Rocky Long was maybe in consideration at one point. Now he's got San Diego State rolling, and so you hear stuff like that, and, well, you were close, but you didn't get it. Like you said, it's hard, and for UNLV, it's even harder because they're not bringing in guys who are sure things. It's all speculation. It's coaching prospects and guys who might be good and who are willing to work for what you're going to pay and who are willing to take a job where, if you're going to be the UNLV coach, you're going to lose for your first year. You're going to lose for your first 2 or 3 years. You know, it's not an instant turnaround where you can. If you're a coach that's looking for a stepping stone job, you want to say, hey, I can go in there and turn it around right away. It'll look great on my resume. And then a bigger school will come calling. You'll see that and come calling. UNLV's not like that. It's not going to be an instant turnaround that's going to make you look great. You've got to roll up your sleeves and get in there and work for 3 or 4 years, bring in a bunch of recruiting classes, put together a really good staff. And then, you know, maybe you'll have some success down the road. It's just not that attractive to an experienced coach or a short thing. So like you said, it's tough. It's like tough to find the right fit. And a lot of that is just luck. Like if the coach that you think is the next big thing actually turns out to be the next big thing, it's great. But more often than not, you know, they don't. And then you're 3 years from there, you're looking for another coach. So it's a tough cycle that UNLV is in right now. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm sure we'll have a lot more talk about, you know, the state of the program, what's going to happen with Tony Sanchez. But as we've alluded to multiple times, still games left to play. And Saturday at 7:30, UNLV is hosting Fresno State. The Bulldogs have just been – talk about getting the right coach in there. I mean, Jeff Tedford has done an incredible job. Fresno State comes in ranked 20th, a 25.5-point favorite. I don't feel like anyone's going to be expecting anything out of UNLV in this game, but I have a tough time seeing them keep it close. What do you expect here? What do the Rebels have any prayer? How can they kind of keep this respectable?
Well, UNLV went up to Fresno State last year, and they won that game by the ball control passing offense with Johnny Stanton at quarterback. And they just, you know, short passes, they converted. I think it might have been their best third down conversion rate of the season. They were very efficient offensively. And then on defense, they found a way to defend the Fresno State, you know, spread passing game. They got a couple fourth down stops in the passing game and just very timely defensive plays. That was their formula last year. I don't know if you can count on that formula again, just because the defense is not going to stop those same passing plays this year. I really don't have any confidence in them to do that. Fresno State is, 280 passing yards a game. They're completing 70% of their passes. So you figure they're going to come in here and just throw the ball all over UNLV, score a lot of points. Yeah, it's a tough matchup. It might be the toughest matchup, from an X's and O's standpoint left on the schedule for UNLV, just because of the way that they can stretch you out defensively, make you play in space in the passing game, which is UNLV's number one issue across the entire team. They just don't have anyone that can make a play on the ball in space or stick with receivers down the field or on the perimeter. So that's probably UNLV's biggest weakness up against Fresno State's biggest strength, something they're really good at. So maybe get a couple bounces in the passing game, bat down a couple balls, maybe get a tipped interception, get some good coverage. Maybe the sack production comes back a little bit if they want to get creative with blitzes and stuff like that. But beyond that, I mean, it's hard to see a matchup that UNLV can take advantage of or win in this game.
Yeah, it's just so crazy to hear all this about Fresno State, because, I mean, I guess if you're looking for hope in the UNLV situation, 2 years ago, Fresno State was just dreadful. They didn't win a single FBS game. UNLV destroyed them that year, and I believe they were favored in the game. They hit maybe even a bigger low than UNLV, and look where they are 2 years later. Not saying that UNLV is going to be, you know, competing for conference championships in 2 years, but just to show, I mean, there can be these dramatic turnarounds, and I've kind of been just stunned as much as anyone in the country where Fresno State is after where they were, you know, just 2 years ago.
And that was 100% chalked up to coaching, I think. They got the right coach, a guy who was a proven college football winner, a guy who had success at a big-time level in college football in the a big conference. And then he bounced around in the NFL as a coordinator, I believe, and then he was just looking for a job. And then Fresno State came along, and he brought that offensive system, and boom, you're back and rolling. Can UNLV attract a guy like that? Can they land someone like that?
Can they pay someone like that? I'm assuming Tedford's like making a little bit more than UNLV pays.
So, I mean, is there someone like that out there that UNLV can really realistically get? That's the question. But yeah, Tedford has done a great job there.
For sure. So we'll have to see. I mean, I don't see UNLV having much success in this game, but they've played Fresno State well. Certainly their backs are against the wall. It's just so hard trying to say positive things and then looking at San Jose State 50. It's just that's a tough thing to see.
Yeah, I mean, Fresno State's, let me see what they're averaging here. They're averaging 40 points a game. They're 17th scoring offense in all of college football. So, I mean, if you're coming to the game, like, is this going to be a defensive struggle? Probably not. If you're UNLV, you're relying on Max Gillum to score 5 or 6 touchdowns to keep you in this game. And that's a tough bet after watching him throw 3 picks at San Jose State. So, yeah, not a ton of optimism. I'm sure Tony Sanchez will give us some optimism this week when he meets the media for his press conference and at practice, because he's always a positive guy. So, I mean, I'm sure he'll have his team fired up. And that's one thing you can say about the Rebels this year that maybe you couldn't say in the past. They play hard. They played hard at San Jose State, even when they were down on the road in the fourth quarter. They played hard. I can't say that they've really given up in any of these blowout losses that they've had. And that's the good thing. So they'll at least give themselves a chance to, you know, stir that, you know, upset, you know, juice early in the game, because they'll come out and they'll play hard. So that's probably the one positive you could say about the Rebels at this point.
All right. Well, that's UNLV hosting Fresno State Saturday at 7:30. Feel like we talked a lot about the game despite the circumstances. So we'll see what the Rebels can do. We'll see if they can rally, sitting 2-6 right now. Not the year anyone wanted, but not over as well. we'll still be here through whatever happens to break it all down. For Mike, I'm Case. Thanks for listening to The Rebel Room.